their success depends on our continued withdrawal. That will not happen on my watch.
She is talking about China and the United States and how things might change. It's Thursday, February 25th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. You can find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, South Korea begins COVID vaccine distribution. More vaccine is being manufactured, but where does it go? Congress investigates the storming of the U.S. Capitol, and doctors say Tiger Woods is lucky to be alive. That and more on today's VOA Asia. The Senate has confirmed career diplomat Linda Thomas Greenfield as the United States' permanent representative to the United Nations. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports Thomas Greenfield is likely to be tested by countries like China at the world body.
Despite objections from some Republican senators that delayed the vote, Ambassador Linda Thomas Greenfield received strong bipartisan support on Capitol Hill Tuesday, with more than 20 Republicans joining Democrats to confirm her as the U.S. representative to the United Nations.
On this vote, the yeas are 78, the nays are 20. The nomination is confirmed.
During her confirmation hearing last month, Thomas Greenfield sought to dispel concerns voiced by some senators that she might be soft on the communist government in China. Linda Thomas Greenfield, U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations.
In particular, we know China is working across the UN system to drive an authoritarian agenda that stands in opposition to the founding values of the institution, American values. Their success depends on our continued withdrawal. That will not happen on my watch.
Echoing the sentiment, State Department spokesperson Ned Price on Tuesday said American values and U.S. allies and partnerships are a source of strength in competing against China on the world stage. State Department spokesperson Ned Price.
When we seek to take on China alone, as we've done in the past, I think that the results would be meager compared to what we can do when we are galvanizing collective action.
During Thomas Greenfield's 35-year State Department career, she worked in both Democratic and Republican administrations. As an Africa specialist, she served as U.S. Ambassador to Liberia and held posts in Kenya, Gambia, and Nigeria. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. The United States is looking to scrutinize China's commitments under an investment deal that was signed in late December between the European Union and China. Uyghur rights groups pressure corporate sponsors to boycott the 2022 Beijing Olympics. Senior Chinese trade officials appeal to the U.S. and Australia to revive trade ties with Beijing. Thousands of anti-government demonstrators threw confetti and chanted slogans in Nepal's capital on Wednesday to celebrate Parliament's reinstatement by the Supreme Court. Malaysian opposition lawmakers and international human rights groups demand the government explain why it deported more than 1,000 Myanmar migrants in violation of a court order. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. This is VOA Asia. After carrying out one of the world's most successful initial coronavirus responses, South Korea this week begins COVID-19 vaccinations. It is one of the last developed countries to start mass inoculations. VOA's Bill Gallo reports from Seoul.
Beginning Friday, South Korea will administer the AstraZeneca vaccine at nursing homes. That is about 2.5 months after vaccines began in countries such as Britain and the United States. It may seem late, but unlike some nations, the virus has never spread out of control in South Korea. That has given the government more time and tools to combat the pandemic, says Ki Mo-ran, an epidemiologist who has advised the South Korean government on its coronavirus response.
She says vaccines are important for disease prevention, but they're not enough on their own, and that South Korea's strategy involves more than just vaccines. South Korea's tools have been tremendously effective. Just 1,500 South Koreans have died, compared to 500,000 Americans. Though South Korea has seen small infection spikes in recent months, it has been able to manage the outbreaks by adjusting social distancing guidelines. As a result, the pandemic has rarely felt dire in South Korea. Restaurants and bars in Seoul, where most South Koreans live, now stay open late night. Buses and trains are packed. Street demonstrations, which in normal times are everywhere, have also begun to reemerge. Still, the vaccine delay has prompted accusations the government did not act quickly enough to purchase vaccines, the one tool that would allow the country to permanently leave the pandemic behind. Choi Jae-uk is with the Korean Medical Association. He says the government should have been more aggressive in securing the vaccine and more cautious about the vaccine campaign after talking with medical experts and citizens. But he says they did the opposite. South Korea has ambitious vaccination goals. It hopes to vaccinate 10 million people by July and to achieve group immunity by November. But many experts say those timelines are unrealistic. Some estimates say group immunity may not happen until the middle of next year. But Key says focusing on herd immunity misses the point. She says even if we reach 70% of group immunity, it does not mean that COVID-19 will disappear magically. More important, she says, is preventing deaths, which South Korea has been able to do. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
Happening now in Asia, China's state media reports the country's Tianwen-1 spacecraft entered a temporary parking orbit around the planet Mars. It'll stay there for about 3 months before attempting to land a rover on the surface. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Drug company officials say they're speeding up delivery of COVID-19 vaccines in the United States. With more vaccine plants online, they say they can produce enough vaccine by the end of July to cover nearly the entire U.S. population. But low-income countries are still at the back of the line. VOA's Steve Barragona has more.
In the United States, long waits for scarce shots have plagued the COVID-19 vaccine rollout. But drug company executives told Congress Tuesday that they are ramping up the vaccine supply in a big way. Pfizer Chief Business Officer John Young.
We recognize the need to vaccinate more people more quickly and have worked hard to significantly increase production.
Young said the company has scaled up manufacturing and added production lines.
As a result of these improvements, we expect to increase the number of doses available from approximately 4 to 5 million doses per week at the beginning of February to more than 13 million doses per week by the middle of March.
Moderna President Stephen Hodge told Congress that his company, too, has greatly increased manufacturing.
We have doubled our monthly deliveries since the end of 2020, and we're aiming to double them again by April to more than 40 million doses a month.
Can I be called?
By the end of July, the two companies together expect to deliver 600 million doses, enough to vaccinate 300 million people with the two-dose vaccines. A third vaccine may be coming online soon. This one from Johnson & Johnson takes only one shot and does not need the extremely cold storage the others do. It's 85% effective against severe disease, slightly less than the other two, but still very good, says Johns Hopkins University vaccine expert William Moss.
And if you can get that with a single dose and a vaccine that you can only need to store at refrigerator temperatures, that's a big plus for many countries.
Johnson & Johnson's vaccine will get a hearing Friday, a key step before approval. Many countries will have to wait for these vaccines, though. Companies may be ramping up manufacturing, but high-income countries have locked down most of it for this year, says the head of the International Rescue Committee's health unit, Mesfin Tesama.
Although this announcement is welcome news, but it will be, you know, down the line, maybe towards the end of 2021 or 2022, for really meaningful volume to be available for low-income countries.
Pfizer sold 40 million doses this year to the World Health Organization-backed COVAX facility for low- and middle-income countries. Johnson & Johnson sold 100 million. More are coming from AstraZeneca, but experts say it will take many more vaccine factories worldwide to reach the world's 7.8 billion people. Steve Barragona, VOA News.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. With VOA Asia, also follow radio program hosts VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. A telecoms outage shut all trading on India's National Stock Exchange for nearly 4 hours on Wednesday before coming back up, leaving investors in the dark. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. For the first time Tuesday, U.S. lawmakers heard details from top security officials about the failures on January 6th when pro-Trump rioters breached the Capitol. As VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson reports, security officials told lawmakers there were numerous law enforcement missteps that day.
6 weeks after the deadly riot at the U.S. Capitol, top security officials told lawmakers they were unprepared for the unprecedented scope of the assault. Former chief of the U.S. Capitol Police, Stephen Sund.
We properly planned for a mass demonstration with possible violence. What we got was a military-style coordinated assault on my officers and a violent takeover of the Capitol building.
The U.S. Capitol is protected by its own $516 million police force. Local D.C. police and federal authorities were also consulted in the days leading up to Trump's Stop the Steal rally, held as Congress met to certify the November presidential election. Former House Sergeant-at-Arms Paul Irving.
Everyone was very satisfied that we had a robust plan, security plan, that was consistent with the intelligence that we had at the time.
Sund told lawmakers that preparation would have been different if he had been made aware of a January 5th FBI warning of an increase in the violence of protester threats. Democratic Senator Gary Peters.
How could you not get that vital intelligence on the eve of what's going to be a major event?
Former chief of the U.S. Capitol Police, Stephen Sund.
That's something we need to look at. What's the process and how do we streamline that information getting to where it needs to go?
The exact reason for a significant delay in calling on National Guard reinforcements also is still unclear, as officials disputed the timeline of events during the assault. Acting chief of the Washington, D.C. Metropolitan Police Department, Robert J. Conti III.
I was surprised at the reluctance to immediately send the National Guard to the Capitol grounds.
More than 250 people have already been charged for their role in the riot, the top security officials agreeing the attack on Congress was clearly coordinated beforehand. Acting chief of the Washington, D.C. Metropolitan Police Department, Robert J. Conti III.
There was radio communication by several individuals that were involved, the coordinated use of chemical munitions to include bear spray by several people that were out there. I certainly believe it was coordinated.
Tuesday's hearing marks just the beginning of congressional investigations into the worst breach of the U.S. Capitol in two centuries. Testimony from Pentagon officials is expected next week. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
Happening in Asia, the Philippines Health Ministry said Wednesday it will investigate the illegal use of unauthorized COVID-19 vaccines after a presidential advisor admitted to receiving shots of a Chinese vaccine smuggled into the country. Stay with us for the latest news from and about Asia at voanews.com and all of our digital platforms. We continue on VOA Asia. U.S. technology companies with millions of users worldwide face renewed scrutiny and stepped up efforts to regulate them in Washington. Michelle Quinn reports.
In the wake of the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol, there is renewed interest in looking at the power of technology giants. Protesters reportedly used social media to plan. Facebook and Twitter kicked off their sites former President Donald Trump and others. Google, Apple, and Amazon booted Parler, an app used by supporters of Trump. Jerry Davis is a professor of management at the University of Michigan who spoke to VOA over Skype.
The real source of power is being a gatekeeper, being an intermediary that everyone has to pass through. That's really the thing that we want to look at.
Scrutinizing so-called big tech is nothing new. Google, Facebook, and Amazon are already facing antitrust investigations, and tech CEOs routinely testify in Congress. While many agree that tech has too much power, they differ on what to do about it. Break up the companies, restrict their abilities to collect user data, and allow users to sue if their privacy is violated, put laws in place to make the firms responsible if they are conduits for online falsehoods. India McKinney is the director of federal affairs at the Electronic Frontier Foundation. She spoke to VOA over Skype.
The Republicans are upset at what they see is cancel culture or companies moderating conservative speech on their platforms. And Democrats tend to be more concerned that platforms aren't moderating enough and are leaving up too much hate speech or too much harassment.
When it comes to online misinformation, something both parties say is a problem, creating new rules can be difficult, particularly in the U.S., where the First Amendment protects speech. India McKinney.
How do you write a piece of legislation that makes illegal misinformation but protects satire and parody and comedy and commentary and hyperbole and like all of these other things that we use for entertainment and that are important parts of political discussion and discourse?
What's needed, say some observers, is a fresh look at big tech's power, including how the technology itself works in uniting or dividing people. Nicole Turner Lee is a senior fellow and director of the Center for Technology Innovation at the Brookings Institution. She spoke to VOA over Skype.
I think a national conversation on this. What are the rules of the road? What's the appropriate conduct? How do we keep people safe? And I think that is really a turning point.
Over coming months, more users and governments worldwide will debate tech's role as powerful gatekeepers for society. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
Thank you for being with us on VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Armed police in Myanmar blocked the path of anti-coup protesters as they marched in the flashpoint city of Mandalay on Wednesday. Some 3,000 teachers and students stood their ground a short distance from the barricades and barbed wire as police watched impassively, holding riot shields and cradling rifles. After playing protest songs and listening to speeches condemning the February 1st military coup, the demonstrators moved away, thrusting three-fingered salutes into the air as they went. Saturday, police and soldiers shot dead two people in Mandalay as they broke up a strike by dock workers. Earlier the same week, they had violently dispersed a rally in front of a state bank branch with batons and slingshots. The atmosphere in the city remains tense. Meanwhile, Myanmar's neighbors are stepping up efforts to resolve the political crisis triggered by the military's overthrow of the country's elected civilian government. Wun Aung Maung Nguyen, the junta's foreign minister, traveled to Bangkok Wednesday for talks with Thai Prime Minister Prayut Chan-o-cha and the foreign minister Don Pramodwinai, that according to Thai government sources. Indonesian Foreign Minister Retno Marsudi is also in the Thai capital for talks on the situation in Myanmar. Indonesian Foreign Minister Retno Marsudi is also in the Thai capital for talks on the situation in Myanmar. Rutgers News Agency reported Retno and Wun Aung Maung Nguyen met Wednesday, quoting a source from Thailand's foreign ministry. Thank you for being with us on VOA Asia. Golfer Tiger Woods suffered injuries in a single car crash early Tuesday in California. Isha Sarai has more on that.
Professional American golfer Tiger Woods underwent surgery after sustaining injuries to both his legs during a single car accident in California Tuesday. The car reportedly rolled over near Ranchos Palos Verdes, California, located about 32 kilometers south of Los Angeles. Officials said Woods had to be extracted from the wreckage. Video footage of the crash scene showed a vehicle with a badly damaged front end on its side in a ditch at the bottom of a hill. Pieces of the car were spotted around the wreckage.
Well, at the time it made, it crossed the center divider to the point that it rested was several hundred feet away. So obviously that indicates they were going at a relatively a greater speed than normal. However, because it is downhill, it slopes, and it also it curves, that area has a high frequency of accidents. It's not uncommon.
Woods, 45, was in the Los Angeles area for the PGA Tour's Genesis Invitational, a tournament run by his charity. The 15-time major tournament winner did not play in the tournament because he was recovering from a December 23rd back surgery, the fifth such procedure for one of golf's all-time greats. He last played on December 20th in the PNC Championship with his young son, Charlie. In 2019, then-U.S. President Donald Trump awarded Woods the Presidential Medal of Freedom, the highest civilian honor in the country, after Woods won his 15th major championship. Isha Sarai, VOA News.
The new president of the Tokyo Olympics emphasized ambitions to make a lasting impact on gender equality in Japan, as the Games chiefs reported to the International Olympic Committee Executive Board Wednesday. Seiko Hashimoto said that promoting gender equality was a priority alongside COVID-19 precautions and establishing a Tokyo model that could be used in the future to deal with postponed games. Hashimoto recently replaced 83-year-old Hoshiro Mori, a former Japanese prime minister who was forced to resign as organizing committee president after making sexist comments about women. Hashimoto said, "I would like to see women's participation on the Tokyo 2020 Executive Board increase to 40%. Her comments came a day before the game's gender equality promotion team hosts its first meeting. Hashimoto also acknowledged Japan's low ranking in the World Economic Forum's Gender Equality Index and stressed the need for increased women's participation across politics and business. The Tokyo Olympics are slated to go ahead despite worries about COVID-19 and low public support for the Games. We continue on VOA Asia. Orangutans are a critically endangered species, and the coronavirus pandemic halted efforts to protect and increase their population. But as VOA's Arash Arabasadi reports, rescue efforts in Indonesia are back underway.
The first few steps of freedom for these orangutans in Indonesia. The great apes, a relative of humans, have been under the care of the Borneo Orangutan Survival Foundation. There, veterinarians and specialists work with orangutans on the skills they'll need to survive after having been rescued from captivity. The coronavirus pandemic derailed much of their work, including plans to release the animals into the wild. Now, CEO Jamartin Sahit says it's time to get back to work.
After almost a year, we have managed to curb the spread of COVID-19 in our rehabilitation center, and a large number of orangutans are ready to be released into the wild. We think now is the time for Bush Foundation to carry out orangutan releases back again.
A helicopter meets the guest of honor at an airport and flies the orangutan deep into the forest, avoiding civilization en route to the wild, where veterinarians like Patrick Flagoletta remain vigilant.
We will carry out off the patrol and make sure the orangutan still in the good health.
In all, staff with the Borneo Orangutan Survival Foundation released 10 orangutans, but say they still have much to do. Orangutans are considered critically endangered, meaning the species is at high risk of extinction. The foundation cares for more than 400 of the great apes. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, Amy Heibel, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Stay safe and enjoy the day ahead.